All right. So yeah, I think what we're doing chatting as we gather in the circle is just a really lovely way to start something like this, because I'm hearing the stories of what people are doing in the art and the creative practice and even the sexuality and the fun relationship building things that people are doing, and I feel really energized that this is this is where leadership begins, I think, in a reimagined space for leadership. And to imagine that all of these things are part of leadership, I think, is a really powerful reframing for us as we imagine what does the world need? What should leadership be for our time right now? So just to let you know how this call is going to play out, it's quite an informal call. I will mostly leave the lines unmuted, so if you want to speak and find a bit of space in the conversation, I welcome you to speak. If I need to at some point, I may mute some lines if it gets a little bit noisy. But to start out with, I do want to introduce the three people. I'm reluctant to call them my only wisdom circle. I feel like this whole group is my wisdom circle, but the three people in particular who participated as and let me interview them for Lead With Your Wild Heart and were willing and able to join us in this call. And those people are Desiree Attaway and Lisa Wilson and Julie Daly. And I just want to tell you a little bit about them because I love them all dearly and they inspire me greatly. Desiree is, she, her and I decided that we were sisters separated at birth, even though our skin is a slightly different tone. We are very, we have a lot of similar
That's just the
worldviews.
outside.
Exactly. We have really connected, and we've never met in person yet. That's a bit of a sadness still in our lives that we do need to give each other that in-person hug. But Desiree does amazing work with leaders, with emerging leaders, especially in the world of nonprofit and emerging leaders for social justice and social change that's necessary. And she's traveled all over the world and has gathered amazing stories of people doing really remarkable things and works to inspire and advise them in that work. Lisa Wilson is Lisa is just a big-hearted, beautiful, contemplative artist, and she does really, really she does beautiful artwork, and she does it in such a really mindful way, and has just launched something new called Being Breath, and really engages people in mindfulness and in art making and in getting back to the breath in many ways. And one of the things I love about Lisa is the way that she incorporates those things into day-to-day life. And when I interviewed her for Lead With Your Wild Heart, it was just really lovely to witness how often she mentioned things like washing the dishes or washing the kitchen floor, things that are such ordinary moments in our lives. But she finds a way to embed the sacred into those moments, and that's what I appreciate her about her. And the third is Julie Daly, and Julie is the host of Unabashedly Female. She is a beautiful person. I feel like I get lost in her eyes when I get a chance to speak with her on
Exactly.
Skype. She has this beautiful, rich warmth in her eyes, and so much wisdom. You can tell that the wisdom comes from a deep place, having gained a lot of wisdom through grief and through some of the really hard things that life brings, and yet coming out of there beautifully blossoming like a flower that's just deeply rooted and reaching towards the sun. And she's one of my wise guides when it comes to understanding the feminine and understanding what it means to bring all that we are as women into the world and as men, but with our feminine wisdom intact. So thank you to those three. And thank you to everyone else who's on the call. We just had one more join. I think it's Christy Swanson. Christy, is
Hey,
that you?
that's me. Yeah, sorry, I was on mute.
That's all right. Thank
Hello.
You. Welcome to the circle. I'm just trying a new technology, and I get to see people's names, or some of them have names pop up. So
awesome.
It's kind of fun to know who's showing up in the circle. Okay, so to start with, I thought I would give you just a little bit of a background, kind of the backstory on what this is that's really been emerging for me, and when it comes to reimagining leadership, where this has been growing in me, and it's been a long time thread in my life. I came to leadership fairly early, and then kind of never fully trusted it in myself. But I was, you know, junior high class president. And then went through a few years where I wasn't allowed into leadership, coming from a fairly traditional Christian background and church leadership, et cetera, where women were not given those roles, and really kind of having internal wrestlings about that, and yet knowing that there was some place for me there. And so for a number of years, I really wrestled with not really recognizing leadership in myself. And so I understand, and I deeply connect with a lot of women who really question what it means to be a leader and how to engage with the leader in them. I cut my teeth in leadership, so to speak, in government roles. So really in a place that I got a lot of growth opportunity and a lot of good mentorship from one woman in particular who was the first person who hired me into leadership. Luckily for me, my first experience in leadership was with a really wise guide and really supportive woman who absolutely believed in my capacity to lead even before I knew that I could lead. But at the same time, in government, as you can imagine, it doesn't really foster a lot of feminine approach to leadership. And so that's, I think, where when I first showed up in leadership, I took to it really intuitively and had a mentor and guide who really supported my bringing my passion, my creativity, my, you know, my intuitiveness to the leadership circle. And yet it started getting squashed fairly early on, and started hearing messages that was the wrong way to show up at the leadership table. And one of my earliest messages came in the form of, I was sitting around a boardroom table where we had all been really, really in a difficult emotional place, making some tough, tough decisions about cutting funding and cutting staff, and we knew that this was going to hurt people that we cared about. And my comment in that circle, looking around the circle of faces that were wounded and hurting for the hurt that we were going to have to cause in this action, and I just spoke up. I said, before we leave this table, I think we need to express a little bit about how we're feeling about this. And the looks that I got in that moment really, to this day, I reflect on that as being one of those moments that squashed the feminine in me and the feminine intuitive sense that I knew what was needed in that circle. And I started to doubt that. And one of the men at the table turned to me and not unkindly said, "Feelings have nothing to do with leadership." And that became one of the messages that I carried forth into the way I led. And I thought, oh, I got to be more like man. I have to be more thick-skinned. And I kept getting those messages that leadership was about being tough, about being thick-skinned, about being, you know, independent, and all of those things that really became were so central to the traditional style of leadership, but had very little to do with who I was and how I walked in the world. And eventually, after feeling really disenfranchised, I did finally leave government and ended up in a place that was much more close to my heart, close to how I led, and that was in nonprofit. But even there was always still a disconnect, and I had to really struggle to value my sense that we needed to collaborate more, that we needed to bring more relationships. I remember hearing again another message where we were working in nonprofit, and our work was ending hunger. We were working in a nonprofit that served in parts of the world where there was a great deal of hunger. And I remember trying to introduce a new branding idea, because I worked in communications, and the branding idea was Building Relationships to End Hunger. And I felt very strongly that that would be a good way to promote the work we were doing. And sitting around a management table was told by the programming manager, who incidentally was a woman, but had, like me, learned to lead more like a man than like a woman, turned and said, she kind of made a face, and she says, no, in my experience, relationships often get in the way of good programming. And I remember just feeling kind of heartbroken in that moment, that we don't want to encourage relationships to help end hunger because relationships get in the way. And again, that was another one of those messaging that became, that told me once again, I'm doing it wrong. There must be something I'm doing wrong. And it kept going, and I kept trying to live authentically and live in the way that I wanted to, felt called to lead, and always picking up those kind of messaging. And finally, a few years later, I did manage to leave nonprofit and then got into teaching, and teaching various ways. And one of the ways I teach is at a university setting in a continuing ed program. And after my first year teaching, loving it and really engaging with the students and feeling really like I was in a good place, and getting a message there that perhaps as a teacher I was too touchy-feely. And again, there it was again, and I remember in that moment just feeling triggered and feeling like, oh, once again, I'm not quite doing it right, that I haven't learned how to be the serious scholar in my teaching role, and something about this is, you know, I can't be taken seriously if I bring compassion and love into the classroom. And fortunately, I didn't let those things totally drown the strong, growing, intuitive sense that there had to be a different way. And that's what's been my work really in the last few years, is trying to pave pathways for women who believe really strongly that there must be a different way. And so I've spent a lot of time learning, a lot of time studying with remarkable teachers, people like Christina Baldwin, who teaches circle and story work, people like Meg Wheatley, who's been my inspiration in the language, a lot of language I use about moving from leader as hero to leader as host, and lots of other people. Peter Block has been another inspiration for me. And so this is where I come to today. And so I invite you, this call is less of a teaching call and more of a circle. I want it to be a conversation circle, because I deeply believe that one of the ways that we need to reimagine leadership is that we need to bring people into circle. And that's, I've learned much of that work from Christina Baldwin, but I'm always struck by some of the language that Peter Block uses, and he also teaches circle work, and he says that his view of a leader is that a leader's role is to bring people out of exile and into the circle. And I see that as one of my roles in the world, too, is to create the spaces for conversation, create the spaces where we get out of that disconnected hierarchical world of that the traditional way of leading has taught us is the right way, because of our capitalist society, because of industrial revolution, all of those things getting in the way and teaching us to disconnect from each other and disconnect from the world. So that's a bit of my history and what brought us to this point of this call today. And so with that, what I'm going to start with, I'm going to start by asking a few questions. Primarily first, I want to ask of the three women that Desiree, Lisa, and Julie, and then I'm going to open each question up to the rest of you, because I welcome each person to bring their wisdom. And what I often say when I gather people in a circle, especially if I'm teaching in a classroom, is that the teacher is never the only person that brings wisdom into the circle. Every person that shows up at the rim of the circle has brought some wisdom into it. So you're welcome to speak. You're also welcome to not speak if you'd rather just listen. But I'm going to start by asking... First, we'll go Desiree, Julie, and then Lisa. The first question is, how do you define leadership, and how would you say that your definition has changed over the years? So Desiree, do you want to start with that one?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for, again, inviting me into the circle. I always appreciate being in community with you and the folks that you bring into your life. When I think of, I coach a lot of folks, and I spend a lot of time lately with a mastermind group of women that I've been working with, and these are women of color in particular, and we talk about leadership a lot, and I've really kind of been breaking down the components that I think for leadership, and they are influence, connected community, and for me, the most important critical piece of leadership is fearlessness. And, you know, influence is that people, relationships are what matter, right? And you work hard and with and for people, not organizations and not businesses. And when I became successful in my career, it was when I owned my expert status and my power and my voice, and I made sure I had the skills and the ability to get the job done, but to take others with me on that journey. And like Peter Block says, to invite others into the circle. And that relationship's really key of creation, of getting anything done, that building that community, that expanding, helping others to have greater impact, to leveraging skills, that my network is really my net worth, and I'm not just talking in terms of money. I'm talking in terms of the richness and the gifts that my network bring and that they share. And then the fearlessness, which is you have to be fiercely daring. And that's the kind of leadership training that I do with those who are specifically in the social justice field is, you know, you have to risk being uncomfortable. And that true personal growth only happens when we move forward and have the strength and courage to face the big issues. And comfort is a killer. And don't have big plans and big visions and let comfort stop you from making it happen. So for me, being fearless is really one of those core ingredients that I think is really important to define what leadership is, and as a woman, how to be a really great leader is to be bold and be fearless.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Lisa, what are your thoughts?
I have to echo that I am truly honored to be here. In the past, 15, 20 minutes, I already feel like my day has taken a completely different direction. Thank you to both of you and to everybody else who has joined in this circle. This is beautiful. And in coming to this call and thinking about leadership, I find it funny how I had two diverging paths of thought. And Heather, you asked how our definition of leadership has changed over the years. I think mine continues to change every time I reflect upon it. And the traditional definition of leadership is always the one that comes to mind, is that there is a leader and a follower. It is that, you know, I lead or you lead and I follow. It is very linear in its path. And I think that is one thing that has hindered me and many people over the years, is that we feel that we have to be one or the other. And it's kind of like that, you know, dog-eat-dog world where we're always fighting to get to the leadership position, or we relinquish all of our control and feel like we need to find somebody to lead us. And in my belief, and I think a really strong emerging one throughout the world, is that we are all connected. Everything is connected. Each other, our thoughts to our actions to the environment, my actions and your actions and so on. And because of that, we are all leaders. And I don't mean that in like an inspirational way, like fight your way to the front, we can all do this. It's more that we're all connected on these strings, and sometimes we're pulling on them, and sometimes we are reacting to somebody else's pull. And as I've done, you know, my own self-awareness work and done parenting, which in and of itself is a fascinating exercise in leadership, thinking that, you know, as a mom, I'm the leader, and often realizing I'm not. It has been just a really interesting experience to see how this form of leadership has kind of like a radiating circle can truly impact my world when I take responsibility for it and when I play a creative part in that leadership. It's not that I am relinquishing control to anybody else. In fact, I am taking control of the only person that I can, and that's myself. And in so doing that, I am providing examples to others who then can go within themselves, not even necessarily lead anybody else, but lead themselves into this embodiment of the wisdom that we already possess. So, you know, we're both leaders simultaneously as we're, you know, taking control of our own thoughts and actions, and we're followers. We're beginners again and again and again and again.
Yeah. Thank you. It's lovely. Julie.
Yes, again, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you. And it's so fascinating listening to everybody speak so far. Much of what I would have responded with has been spoken. So I've noted a few things that haven't been spoken yet, I think. First of all, I would say growing up in the 50s in California, 50s, 60s, to me, I grew up with a sense of leadership that there would be a man at the top that would take care of everything, always had the right answers, and could get stuff done. So that was a very young sort of impression on me of leadership. And moving through my life, I began to see that that actually wasn't true. And noticing through the feminist revolution how women sort of stepped into trying to be like that, which at the time was the only response I think that they could have done. And then in my own life, moving out of a role as a systems analyst and into the kind of work I do now, which is very, very different, I've come to see, I would say that some of the most important qualities are responsiveness. You know, really, the ability to really see what's happening, to feel what's happening, to respond to what's happening, to respond to life, which does include that connectedness. It's a felt sense of it. An embodied approach, meaning that there's so much wisdom in the body, and we find that responsiveness to life through the body.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a relationship with everything around us, with life. Knowing the sanctity of life, the sacredness of life, is so important, and I think that we know that more when we are embodied, when we're in our heart and in the deeper part of our pelvis, you know, like we were talking about earlier, where our sexuality and creativity are all move from.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say inviting out wholeness. To me, wholeness is a huge piece of this, because so much has been put away into the dark, into the shadow. You know, this quote by Peter Block, bringing people out of exile, right? How to encourage wholeness in the circles that we lead, or within ourselves even, when we're leading just for our own wholeness. Because life itself is actually does fine if we uphold that wholeness in everything.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to see the wholeness, feel the wholeness, invite it out, not only individually but collectively, I think is hugely important. And then a fluidity. You know, there are times in, I teach at Stanford continuing studies, similar to you, Heather, and
mm-hmm.
I teach creativity and leadership, so I do the creativity part and my colleague does the leadership part, but we talk about all different kinds of leadership. And there are times when a hierarchical leadership is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
There are times, not all the time, obviously, and there are times when a purely relational leadership is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say there are times when it's a fluid movement between the two, or a bringing together of the two, so that it also mirrors a fluidity between honoring those masculine qualities we all embody and honoring the feminine qualities we all embody. So having the ability to dance, you know, to be responsive and feel what is needed here to bring others out of exile, what is needed here to honor life, what is needed in this moment to bring forth the truth, to live transparency.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Thank you.
Heather, this is Desiree. Can I just say one thing?
Yes.
Julie, that it really hit me when you said your understanding of leadership was a man at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was not my understanding of leadership, being a brown person. My understanding of leadership was always women being leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The strong grandma, the strong mom. I never, ever had this concept of leadership as being something that a man was and that women followed. Because I had always come from a culture where it really was the strong grandma and the strong mom and the strong aunties that kept everything going all the time.
Mm.
And so in that sense, I think that was a gift to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I never had this concept that I was not supposed to be in the front of the room.
Yeah.
In fact, it was very interesting. And I work with women from all cultures and backgrounds and histories, I find that I think brown women are told they're too much, and Anglo-white women are told they're not enough.
Mm. Interesting.
As leaders.
Yeah.
And so, for me, that's been something I've been working with, and as I work with folks. So that was really fascinating for me, and I wanted to share that.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. That is interesting, and I'm wondering, Desiree, how did you feel then in circles, and I'm assuming in your work you would be in circles where it was largely white male in
oh, yeah.
the management team. So what was your self-talk in those moments? I mean, how did you still feel that you had absolutely the right to be at the table, or...
I did. It was, you know, and I have to tell you, there was many a times that I was the only one at the table. I was the only woman. I was the only brown woman. And there was one time in my career, and I've worked in a lot of mill industries as well. You know, I worked at IBM with all these engineers, and I've worked in nonprofits who, I don't care how cool and liberal and funky they are, when you get to the bottom line and you see who's at the top, it's always white males. I sat in a room with these two men, and for 15 minutes they went on and on about, I saw you building on that roof, and you were looking awesome, and you were building that hammer. And I literally sat there while they went on and stroked each other for 15 minutes. And in my head, I literally said, in my head, this is what it feels like not to have a penis. And they stroked each other for, I mean, a good long time. You're great. No, you're great. No, you're. And I was like, really? And I was just like, wow, this is what it feels like not to have a penis. Mm-hmm. I never felt that way before.
Yeah, interesting.
And so, yes, there. Even though all through this time I would work for organizations and for places where, you know, I would be the only, whatever in quotes that could be or mean, but my vision of leadership, of the people who got things done, who made things happen, who built relationships and bridges, was always that of women.
Hmm.
Was always that of women.
Interesting. Ooh. So what about the rest of you on the call? The question was, how would you define leadership, and how has your definition of leadership changed in your lifetime?
It's Joanne. I'm not going to give you a full answer, but I have to tell you that in the last, like, 10 minutes, my definition of leadership has just gone bouncing around from speaker to speaker because I can identify with and go further on something that each of you has said that's really rung that bell with me. And I feel like I wish I was writing this all down. I'm glad that it's being recorded, Heather, because thoughts that have been going through my head, conversations I've had with people over the last couple of days, items on the radio that I've been listening to, I just want to interrupt everybody and say, yeah, and another thing. And as an ecologist, somebody who believes in the interconnectedness of all things and realizes the interdependence of the thoughts and the feelings and the responsiveness and also of the kind of matrilineal nature of a lot of community and biologically the roles of men and of women. It surprises me not at all that the idea of women as leaders in community and that is a portion of leadership that I think to date has been missing. Mm-hmm. Is leadership from within a group rather than leadership from the top, a hierarchical variety. And I also agree that there are times when hierarchical leadership is required, but I think that so many times when you're talking about hierarchical leadership, it seems to be in opposition one to the other, whereas with a circle or with a flattened out model of community kind of leadership, it's so much more cooperative, and we feel like we're all on the same side instead of picking sides. Mm-hmm. And isn't that when we make the most progress as a group and as individuals when we're working for the same thing and can find common ground? So I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody who's spoken because I can identify with a lot of what you said. There's a lot of wisdom there. And Heather, good picking.
Thank you. Anyone else? Have any thoughts on that?
I really resonate. Like, there was two things. Well, there was a lot. I'm reading in, like, Joanne. I don't know where to start. It says joy. Mm-hmm. My background is that I'm a Presbyterian minister, but my life got interrupted with cancer. I had cancer in 2009. And then I've been starting to get well again. But I couldn't go back into. I was changed, and with just and the church was still the same. And I got my hands. I remember just a conversation I had. I would lead like Heather with my heart and give my love to the people and be compassionate. But the church is also the way we're taught is a pastor is. Supposed to keep, yes, you are involved, but you're supposed to keep some distance so that the people don't get too attached to you. And when I went through my cancer journey, I decided I was going to be transparent and share and all that with them because they have to go through it themselves. But I remember sitting with a colleague, and she taught. She's taught on both coasts and in theology schools doing CPE. And I said, how do you do it? How do you remain so detached? Or not even, like, how, I always end up getting my, I lead with my heart, but I get myself, my hand slapped, And I always thought that was bad, but... sometimes people see that vulnerability and bite back at you, or that when I've been in meetings and I had to go through mediation because there was some stuff going on in my congregation that they were kind of fear of dying or not wanting to take that risk of going and changing me indifferent. I went through mediation with somebody who was difficult, and they just came out. Barking at me, and I go back into that. I've realized that I don't have a very good flight or kind of combat. Men, you start. There's sometimes women to get ahead. You have to act like a man and be aggressive and assertive, And for me, that just freezes me and shut me down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm drawing two symbols that I've been going a lot with is hearts and stars, and I have a heart on my page, and then I have a star. And when you're talking about that web, you know, there is a point on the top of a star, but you know, you're going back and forth. The one when you draw with the draw in the continuous line, not the Star of David, like the two triangles or the whatever. But the one you draw going
the
five point
pentagram.
Yeah. But you know, there's a point on all those, but it's all interconnected, and mm-hmm. you can actually turn around. I'm just looking at that now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made a heart and a star that have the no smoking sign through it, right? And that's the way that people were told to leave, and that's the way, you know. I was gonna study for chaplaincy, and I pulled out of it because my friend was in the same hospital where it was a mental health hospital in Selkirk, and I just knew I couldn't be there and at the same time as her, but I also just didn't feel like a resonating with that, because they teach you this, you have to have some personal self-awareness, but they teach you this really detached model too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I struggle with that.
Yeah, and one of the, I'm reflecting on a women's retreat that I facilitated recently, and one of the things that we talked about is reclaiming some of our language. I think that's, as women in leadership, that some of our work needs to be about reclaiming the language and saying, no, this is good language. This is, you know, when we talk about heart-based work. And one of the words that became kind of one of those important words in that retreat was the word homemaker. And let's claim that word. Let's be homemakers. Let's bring a sense of home into places where we work and places where we are in community. And let's, as women, be the nurturers and be the caretakers of what it means to have a home. And I thought that was quite a beautiful image to think, to give us permission to do the things that come naturally anyways in terms of creating those spaces and building those relationships.
But I have a very messy house.
Oh, we won't get into judgment about our home space. Is anyone else interested in that question before we move on?
Yeah, this is Katie. I just wanted to say I am really enjoying this conversation, and it's so good to just be in this circle with all of you and explore this language and our experiences. And I was thinking about what I could contribute to the process. And in the work that I do, I host Conversations That Matter, and I also teach a graduate-level Women in Leadership class.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've learned, mainly through like education and conversations and just kind of tapping into some of the history of being a young woman coming up into this world, is the lessons learned in what happened during the second wave with feminism and these consciousness-raising circles where all of a sudden women started to identify like a collective experience that was larger than any one person's experience, and it led to tremendous social change. And I'm speaking from a definitely like a U.S. perspective, but that's part of what I use in helping to frame a definition of leadership for folks in thinking about when we look to identify women leaders, we look to like the history and the context of what women have done throughout time, and identifying and highlighting stories of women who've paved completely new emergent paths.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun. And what I've learned is that the class that I teach is actually housed in educational leadership department. So it's a lot of teachers, it's a lot of folks working towards principalship or superintendents type of position. And there's over and over and over again, I have men in the class that are history teachers or gym coaches or band conductors that are like, I never even thought about that. I never even thought about integrating stories of women throughout, you know, the context and history of what it is I teach.
Mm.
And
I think that there's something to honoring our history and being able to define our present understanding of leadership.
Yeah, I love that. When I teach my Lead with Your Wild Heart course, one of the first lessons, I invite women to consider on whose shoulders are you standing, and that's really a reflection of who has come before and what paths have they cleared the way for you, and so reflecting on the history, and one of the things that's really important to me, and I think I hear it in what you're saying, is let's honor those women for the place they were at then. And so I think even of my own mother, I mean, my own mother would never have called herself a feminist, and yet there are certain ways that she did pave the way for me to have more freedom, and I have to honor, and that's one of the reasons I'm quite careful in my language, even on my blog, et cetera, not to be critiquing other women speaking out on feminism, because I think that we create divisiveness by, you know, assuming one has a better way of defining what feminism should be or how women should be in the world. And really, we're in conversation, and let's be in conversation. Let's bring that to our leadership, not this need to jockey for position the way that we've seen it modeled. So honoring the work that women are doing, and some of them are going to do it differently than us, but that's still worth honoring.
Yeah.
All right, let's move to the next question. And I think we're going to lose Lisa fairly quickly, right?
In about 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
I have to go pick up the kiddos. So.
You're about to lose Desiree in about 3 minutes.
Yes, me too. Okay, I'll ask the next one quick, and if either of you want to jump in.
Okay.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what we think the world needs now in terms of leadership, the way that you see the world. What do you think is needed? What's the ache and longing and need for leadership now?
Go for it, Desiree.
I think what we need in leadership with women are women who believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Who really believe in their abilities and their power and their right to be whoever they are and still be in the front of the room and still be side by side and still be all of that. I just think the things we say to ourselves and how hard we are and how judgmental we are within ourselves really is what holds us back more than anything else in terms of being the leaders that we want to be.
Mm-hmm. How do we change that, Desiree? It's Joanne. How do we change that? How do we give
you know what?
How do we parent in a way that gives our daughter
You know what? You give your daughter a voice when she's six. And actually, this is something I've been talking to people about more and more. You know, and especially coming from a brown family where it's, you know, you are seen and not heard. You're respectful. And I just think that there's a different way. The way little boys are raised to just say what they want, and we just somehow don't do that. And of course, there's layers and layers, and there's systems and people. But I just think to let girls be heard,
mm-hmm.
and to give them a space to be heard, and to value their opinions and their voices, and to rejoice in their victories and their vulnerabilities, and to tell them that they. And to build them to be resilient, right? You fell down, you get back up.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it, right? And just to keep doing that with our young women and with our young men, but with our young women, and really just instilling in them that you can step in front of any room and it's okay for you to be there. You don't need the title. Nobody gives you permission. Give it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait for somebody to say, oh, now you have this title, or you're in this role, or you're X, Y, or Z. Own that power yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And give them the ability and the right to know that they can make it for themselves. I'm fortunate. I've been raising two amazing women, young women, who have taught me a lot. over the years. Like Lisa said, being a parent is such an amazing kind of effort in leadership, and they've taught me a lot, and I've just really tried to build the stage and the space for them to own their voice.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Lisa, have you got time to jump in?
I sure do. And Desiree, thank you for that. That was powerful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you all. Thank you all so much. Thank you for inviting me to the circle, and I'm so sorry I have to break it and leave. But know that this has been wonderful. And so I just say, let us not be silent.
Thank you. That's nice to help to part on.
Bye,
Desiree. Bye, Desiree.
Bye-bye. Desiree, before Desiree goes, she can see it on the recording. This is Grace from New Zealand.
Hi, Grace. Welcome.
I've been listening for a while, but I was a bit late. It's 10 to 8 in the morning here on the next day. What are we today, Thursday? Well, I'm the day after you, but anyway. A Mighty Girl. Just note down, A Mighty Girl is a Facebook that is the most amazing thing for exactly what Desiree was saying about giving women, that young girls, that voice and language.
Yeah, A Mighty Girl. Okay.
I keep posting things on my Facebook because it's showing the history, the people whose shoulders we can stand on, the ways we can empower young girls these days. It's just been a source of inspiration to me. Makes me wish my girls were young again so I could start over.
Thank you.
What, Grace?
It's called A Mighty Girl.
A Mighty Girl.
And gathering all these things about books and it's got the women's history things, and they honour women all the time, and they have the books that come up that give this owning of leadership to girls and hear their voice be heard. And Desiree said that so beautifully about, letting girls own the power within themselves. And I think that was such a key point she just made.
Thanks.
So beautifully.
I want to just quickly invite Lisa to speak before she has to depart. Thank you for that, Grace. And Lisa...
Sure, thank you. And thank you, Grace. That was good. I'd like to check that out, too.
Mm-hmm.
As far as leadership, it's fascinating to me what I'm hearing throughout this call and how much we all seem to be saying the same thing just with a different language. And so, when I say what I would like to see in leadership, I really think it's just different terms for what everybody else has already said. But what I really think that we need is a mindful consciousness, and that is for each person to determine on their own. And I think it has to do with women, and it has to do with men, too, just seeing my son and my husband as well, who are very programmed in this world, and who don't often take time to think about what truly is going on in their own mind or their own lives. And we do the same as women. And when we talk about leadership, I constantly go back to thinking of the self and how we, first of all, start examining our own lives and how that can radiate to everybody else, not this kind of, take charge, go out into the world, but first really sit with, like Desiree mentioned, the vulnerabilities, and Julie had mentioned, the wholeness, like looking that, we have so much in the shadows. Really just being able to sit with all of that, to know discomfort, so that as we continue in the world, as we go out and interact with others online or in person, that we are doing so from an honest place, that we have examined all of our own truths, and we are open to experiencing others. I constantly see leadership as this, this radiating light that, Heather, you've talked so often about circle, and I love that, how people are invited in, and when hierarchy is necessary and we have somebody at top, then, somebody leads, and I think it might have been Joy who had mentioned, the stars, how we can continue to turn it, mm-hmm. that then somebody else, comes to the point. But it takes everybody at those points, and it takes everybody to have their own awareness of what is going on in this moment with their thoughts and their emotions to really bring an honest leadership to the table when they're called to do so.
Thank you. That's really beautifully said. I like that. And I reflect on what in the art of hosting work that I do, and I believe, Katie, you're connected with that as well. In that work, they talk about the fourfold practice of hosting, and that before you can host other people or engage in the conversations, you have to do the work of hosting yourself. And I think that's really closely connected with what you're talking about, is that as leaders, we need to begin with personal leadership, with understanding and deepening our mindfulness practice, our engagement with self and self-exploration before we can really be in an authentic way hosting other people and leading other people. So thank you for that, Lisa.
Indeed, and thank you. And I want to send my regrets as well to, just like Desiree, for having to break out of the circle. But I want to just offer a very, very deep bow to you, Heather, and to each person on this call for taking the responsibility out of their day to show up and really take part in this valuable conversation. So, Heather, thank you so much for opening this space and allowing us to do that.
Thank you. And I think it's lovely to depart a circle like this to go be with your children and serve in that leadership role as a mom as well.
Oh, thank you. And they appreciate it, too.
All right. And
thank you,
Lisa.
So much, all.
Bye, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
All right, Julie, do you have something to add to this part of the conversation?
Can you repeat the question? I know it, but I want to make sure.
It was just a simple question. What do you think the world needs now in terms of leadership?
I think we need broken, open hearts.
Mm. Ooh, beautiful.
I think we're in our heads so much that if we don't feel what we've done already, we're not going to get in touch with the heart that can actually know what needs to be done to move us forward.
Mm-hmm.
There's deep grief in the world that people just aren't feeling. How could we not feel grief for what we've done?
Yeah.
And the heart doesn't break, it breaks open.
Yeah.
So by doing that deep inner work, our hearts begin to break open.
Yeah.
If we have daughters, to really model that for our daughters, how do we, our daughters learn from what we do, not what we say. So how to show that, I think we need real humanness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's lovely. And I actually, interesting to say that when I was, I studied with Margaret Wheatley, and one of the first questions she asked all of us as participants before we got into the deeper work, well, not the deeper, but as an entry point into the deeper work, was, what breaks your heart? I think that was even the opening circle question, is what breaks your heart? And from there, you have a deeper understanding of what you're being called into to lead,
yeah,
and to care about and to pour your passion into, because your passion and your capacity for leadership comes from, like you say, from a broken open heart, which is, it seems, there's part of our traditional mindset that feels like that's counterintuitive. We're supposed to be put together, mm-hmm, and supposed to be up there polished and
well,
shiny.
Like you said, that's a mindset.
Yeah.
The mind is saying that.
Yeah.
But the heart, it's ready to break open.
Yeah.
And to me, what pours out of it then is real love. Love that moves you to be in the world, to give your gift, to do what you're here to do. It's a real love that would cry out and say, not to the children.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that to children.
Mm.
Or the planet, or each other,
Yeah, and I think of what's happened in Bangladesh with those factories crumbling, and I think, oh, yeah, I mean, it breaks my heart from this side of the world, and I think if only the people in leadership there making decisions about who is working in that factory had entered their roles from a place of open and broken-hearted,
And one other thing I'll just add is, I think that we can't underestimate the power of a broken, open heart halfway around the world.
Yeah.
We don't have to be there to affect the collective awakening.
Yeah.
Right? Each of us, if we allow our hearts to break open, we wake up a little bit more of the of spirit, right? Of the heart, of the humanity. And I, to me, that's the bottom line, is to embrace our humanity as gangly and as imperfect and as messy as it is. That can be the hardest part for each of us, is to embrace our humanity.
Yeah, and you know what? You just gave me an aha moment. I'm realizing that that's a definition of leadership, being willing to feed into that collective spirit and that collective love. Is a simple and profound a definition of leadership, I think, as I can think of.
Mm.
What about others? What do you think the world needs now in terms of leadership?
Hi, this is Kimberly.
Hi, Kimberly. Welcome.
Hi, Kimberly.
Thank you. There was a couple of things that I was thinking about earlier, and one of them is about redefining what love and compassion is. It's been so over sentiment. It's sentimentality. It's this Hallmark version of what love and compassion is.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't real, because love and compassion is radical, and it's not always flowers and candy and, you know, fluffy things.
Yeah,
love is difficult. It's hard. It doesn't. It's not always about saying yes. Sometimes it's about saying no. And I'm trying to move to this different definition of what those things mean.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this idea that to be a leader, you have to have power over other people rather than sharing power with people.
Yeah.
And empowering each other rather than I'm doing something for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the helper, you're the victim. I think that needs to shift.
Yeah, and I think you contributed a what if question on that, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah, what if we shared power instead of holding power over others? Which I think is quite a beautiful invitation.
That's something that my first time I read about it in print was, I don't know if you're familiar with Starhawk, a pagan author. And I value a lot of the things that she talks about in some of her books.
Another good read on power and the balance that we need to step into is a book by Adam Kahane called Power and Love. And he talks about, at one point he had been doing work that he was very much about bringing more love into leadership practices and work. And he's done some really big, significant work in terms of a really dramatic change in the world. He's worked in post-apartheid South Africa, helping the leaders to imagine a new way of working together. And he said at one point he came to a deep realization that his work, as much as he'd been working on bringing more love, he realized that what he also needed to do was work on bringing love and power into balance. And he talks about it as if you imagine a person walking and one leg is power and one leg is love, and you can't stand on one leg forever and you can't walk on one leg. You need the balance, and it shifts from one leg to the other as you walk. And I've always thought that was a lovely metaphor, realizing that, and you know, love without power. There's that great quote by, was it Martin Luther King or someone that talked about love without power is anemic, and power without love, I think, is something like bullying or something like that. I don't remember exact quote, but.
How do you spell his last name?
Kahane. It's K-A-H-A-N-E. And it's just called Power and Love.
Okay, thank you.
Heather, this is Julie. I'm going to have to hop off, but it's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. We're nearing the end. I did want to open it up to other people, but thank you so much for being with us, Julie.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Julie, I love that image of you hopping off. I feel like we're all on a carousel and you're just
being That's perfect.
Into orbit.
Okay, here I go. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right. Any closing thoughts? Some of you have been doing some deep listening and haven't had a chance yet to speak. You're invited now. If there's any closing thoughts you want to add to the circle.
Heather, it's Krista.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Krista.
Hi. One of the things, I don't know, I guess I just want to maybe affirm a lot of what's been said, but one of the things that sort of was a giant aha moment for me last year was thinking about my role as a woman and how that relates to the theology that I've learned in the past and things like that. And one of the things I've always struggled with is the, you know, the dichotomy between Eve and Mary and good and evil and all that sort of stuff. And mm-hmm. it occurred to me that the common theme, even with the two of those women, was their unique ability to bring change into the world.
Mm.
And Eve brought change that wasn't necessarily good. But Mary, and as I sort of thought about that, it occurred to me that Christ actually forgave that transgression first. Before he even forgave Adam, he forgave Eve through Mary because she allowed him to bring change in a positive way
mm-hmm.
into the world. Mm-hmm. And that was really profound to me anyway, this thought that women have a unique ability to bring change for better or worse. And then mm-hmm. that's actually a divine calling on our lives. And just being aware of that and conscious of that, as many of the others have said already, and not being afraid of that, and using that responsibly and wisely. I wanted to affirm in the conversation so far.
Yeah, I love that's beautiful. I have to think a little bit more about what you just said. That introduced some new ideas for me too. And I have heard, I think it's been in the Art of Hosting work as well, some of the teachers talking about how women are really called to be the hosts of change, because women in the feminine mind there is a greater capacity for sitting with ambiguity and being comfortable in those places of the not knowing
yes.
is more a feminine trait. And so to be able to host that uncertainty and host the discomfort about not knowing what the next thing is and being able to bring people through that into change is a really powerful role for us to play. I agree.
Well, this is Grace from New Zealand. Can I just say that I had a real aha when you were talking about what the world needs now and what are you called in for, and about the deep grief in the world,
yeah.
and the fact that we can make change from where we are. And I've been deeply impacted by the Boston Marathon explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And from this side of the world, I've had an amazing connection with a couple of things that have opened up, where I've been able to connect as someone who's written a book with someone who was affected in the just coming to the end, to friends there. And it doesn't matter where we are in the world, with this amazing global network of things as basic as Facebook, where we can do our little butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched somebody talking, and I've got to get the book, but it's called The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews, and it was about how one person makes this huge difference, but you go back and who made the difference to him, and go back to who made the difference to him, and go back, and it was like he was talking about someone who did some amazing project that fed millions of people with his discovery, but then you went back to somebody else, and you went back, and it went back, and all of a sudden I realized he was talking that George Washington Carver was at the basis, and how he affected someone, and go back to who took George Washington Carver in and saved his life. We have no idea of the power we have in this world to affect change, and we may never know it, but we keep on being faithful and loyal and trusting and hoping and sharing that nurture and love and compassion into the world, and who knows where it will go.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Grace. And I just want to reflect on how you take that personally, and you really take ownership of being able to impact people from the other side of the world. And I just think, I remember standing on the riverbank weeping one day shortly after losing my mom, and my cell phone rang, and it was you from across the world. You'd read something I'd posted on Facebook about my deep grief, and you took it upon yourself to call me and just bear witness to my pain and to be present in that. And so, and I think that that's such a beautiful thing for you to be doing, and others to be doing, is to to bear witness, even though we are on the other side of the world. And as Julie said earlier, we can't underestimate our power to be present in pain that may be very far removed from us. All right. Closing thoughts, anyone?
Oh, I'm good. I have too much stuff going on, my deep thinking and deep listening. I'll put it into some artwork.
Yeah, sounds great.
I'm feeling great, the same.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to offer deep gratitude to each of you for being in this circle. It's been really, really lovely to sit with you and listen and to be present for the opening of our hearts in this way. And I do want to, this was by no means a sales call, but at the same time, I do want to offer the invitation for anyone who is interested. My Lead With Your Wild Heart circle begins next week, exactly a week from today. And I you're very much welcome to consider participating in that. It's been a really beautiful deepening experience for me as I've built this program and as I taught it the first time around, in terms of really understanding what it means to get closer to our place of power, as Desiree said at the beginning, closer to our own intuitive, gifted wild hearts, and to then offer from that place of connecting with ourselves and then being able to offer that out to the world. So you're welcome to join, and I will send out the link to that shortly. And also just yesterday I created, I think probably all of you are on there already, but I created a Facebook page called Women Changing Leadership, feeling very inspired yesterday in a moment of visitation from the muse, and so you're welcome to that as well. So blessings to each of you as you continue in whatever way that you are offering your gifts to the world. And I want to close with one question. This is a question from Peter Block, and he's the one I said earlier. He talked about bringing people in from exile. And the other question that he asks, and I invite you to consider it in some way as you consider how you can be a leader, and he asks the question, what gifts are you holding in exile? So what things are you possibly denying the world of by not bringing those gifts forward, and how might the world be served by you bringing that the gifts in from exile and also the people around you in from exile? So with that thought, I close and offer a deep bow of gratitude to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Heather.
So much.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Farewell.
Bye.